Hello and welcome to Pickleball Therapy, the podcast dedicated to your pickleball improvement. Hope you're doing well out there. My name is Tony Roig. I am your pickleball therapy host every week. This is actually a special episode we're dropping on the mailbag episode. So we've gotten a lot of good feedback, a lot of good questions. We had really nice conversations with our pickleball therapist. I really appreciate you willing to take the time to speak with us about your pickleball journey and what we could help you with in terms of your game. And we also had some pending questions and pending suggestions inside our mailbag. And so we want to answer them in this episode. If you do have a question in the future or something that you're dealing with, something that you're struggling is kind of a strong term, but perhaps you're struggling with something, or perhaps it's just something you have a question about or thinking about, send us an email, therapy@betterpickleball.com. We do our best to answer as many of these as we can in our mailbag episodes. Before we get started, make sure you're checking out. If you're not on our email list, I don't know what's happening, but get on the email list. It's going to be good. You get to see a lot of good information in there. But if you are on the email, be on the lookout for Academy courses coming out, and we have our summit coming up in a few months, a couple of months now. So be on the lookout for that, and just make sure you get registered for that. It's going to be a lot of fun and a lot of good information in there. All right, let me pull up my list here, and we are going to dive right into these. So one of here from the therapist is talking about the importance of the mental game as we age, mental and physical, right? So challenges that we face in our mental and physical in terms of in terms of how we deal with that as we get older, because, you know, none of us is getting younger, and it certainly changes over time in terms of how we, how we address those things. So basically, you know, what I would suggest to you as we get older is, we have to be cognizant, right, of life, right, and cognizant of change in our bodies and change in our minds, right, and change in our ability, for instance, stay focused for longer and things like that. It's going to be more challenging as we get older. By definition, we're probably going to end up playing younger players, right? As we age and new players come in, that's just going to be part of the process. And, you know, the key there is to understand that, be okay with it, and then start thinking about the game maybe a little bit differently, right? Think about how can you outsmart a player who maybe physically is younger and able to do things that you maybe can't do. One option would be more patient, right? Another option would be to use the court better, meaning like particularly the out of bounds, right? If young players want to hit hard, so you use the out of bounds to your advantage. Think of ways that you can use your savvy, right? Your wisdom to outplay those players. And that'll give you, a competitive edge that, frankly, the young players don't have, even though they have, perhaps athletically, they can get around better and things like that. So consider that in terms of your approach to the game. But also, again, think about it in terms of just being aware and being okay with the fact that, we're not spring chickens anymore, and that's okay. Jeff asked a question that's related to this one, so I want to talk about this one. It's about the journey of pickleball, right? And the journey being more than just pickleball, which I agree with. And then, he wanted me to talk about the growth process and basically the idea that he says the pickleball journey seems to follow a logarithmic curve. It basically, you go up the curve and then you kind of flatline for a little bit, and then maybe you dip a little and go up a little and things like that. And so, the question that Jeff had was basically, how do I keep improving, right? He's 65, two bad knees, et cetera. So it relates to, again, as we get older, as our bodies maybe don't work the same as they used to, we just have to think about the game a little more broadly, right? Step back from the game perhaps and say, this approach that I was bringing to the game isn't working any longer, or my body isn't able to do it anymore. So is there another way that I can come at the game? I will tell you that pretty much no matter your age, the soft game is always going to be there for you, okay? Meaning understanding how to use the non-volley zone better and better and better, how to stress your opponents inside the non-volley zone is going to be a super powerful way of playing as you get older. If you're trying to simply out-muscle other players, that's going to become more difficult, right? And this extends beyond age, right? This is a function sometimes of just physical size, right? If you're a smaller player and you're playing larger players, out-muscling them isn't going to be the best strategy. So the better strategy there would be to what? Use your noggin, right? Use that FOSS approach of understanding the game and say, okay, what can I do here that's going to be more effective? And I'll repeat myself here one last time. The soft game will always be there for you. So become a soft game master, right? Think about it like, you know, if you know martial arts or mixed martial arts, there's the boxers and wrestlers and ones that are little, I mean, there's technique, right? But there's a little more brawn, a little more strength in those, a little more just power overpowering. And then there's a jiu-jitsu martial artist, right? That does things a little bit differently and suffocates their opponents. And that's something that you can learn how to do by using the soft game. All right, let's see here from Pete. Pete wrote me a message a little bit ago about reflecting on pickleball and thinking that how, you know, a lot of the players that Pete's seeing out there are just banging the ball, right? As hard as they can hit it. And this is a common conversation these days, right? The game's getting faster. The game's getting, you know, harder. And his contention, he says, is players watch highlights of pro rallies and firefights, and he says, which are awesome, and I agree, and think this is how the game is played. What say you? I would say that I'm going to, maybe I said the soft game. I was ahead of myself when I said the last time I'm going to say the soft game. Folks, the soft game works. The soft game is a very effective way of playing pickleball. Are there players who are coming in and hitting harder and harder than maybe it was 10 years ago? Yeah, you know. I mean, I think it was about 10 years ago, you know, Enrique Ruiz, a Condor, one a Hall of Famer, amazing player, was winning singles and doubles and everything. He's an amazing pickleball player. I'm not trying to take anything away from Enrique. But Enrique is not a power player. Enrique is a touch player. He's a soft and then lob you and things like that, right? The players coming in now that are coming in from like at the pro level, right? That are coming in from Division I college and even some pros and things like that. Pro tennis players, pro, you know, high-level racquetball players. I think De La Rosa was number one in racquetball. You know, you have – they just come with a different mindset. And they can do things with the ball that weren't as common before. But that doesn't really change most pickleball. And what I mean by that is if you can play a good soft game, you can do that jiu-jitsu thing, right? Where you're like a python snake and you're just wrapping around the hard player and just you suffocate them with the soft game. So don't get – what I say, Pete, is – and I agree with you, right? I agree with what you're saying. But just in general, don't get bright lights of the pro matches with all the hard shots distract you from solid, fundamentally good pickleball. And the last thought I have on this is if you watch the very, 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 very best of the pros, those are generally winning with a combination of hard and an excellent soft game. The pro players who only have a hard game don't make it far because the players who have a good soft game can just outgrind them. So the soft game still exists. Even if it doesn't make the highlight reels that often. All right, let's see here. Question here from a therapist or a comment from a therapist. So talking about tournament play, right? So dealing with tournament pressure, am I cut out for tournaments? Anything related to tournament prep and things like that? That's an interesting question. There is a difference, you know, between rec or open play kind of play. And then whether it's a tournament or a ladder league or a team league, whatever it is, you know, something that's a little more competitive, it's going to feel a little bit different. You know, your approach to the game is a little more structured, meaning like for instance, I'm going to talk about targeting in a minute. Actually, that'll be the next question I do because it'll segue nicely. But like, for instance, targeting in tournaments is not only – targeting means like you identify a weaker player or a weaker side of a player and just hit that spot relentlessly. In tournaments and competitive play, not only is it okay to do that, I would submit that it is recommended and advisable to do that because that is the best strategy in those situations. So your mindset does change when you're playing tournament versus rec play and open play. And certainly you're going to feel a little more anxious, obviously, or maybe a lot more anxious when you're playing in a tournament than you're playing in, you know, in your local courts. That said, what I'm going to tell you is that we have if you're a tournament player or thinking about playing tournaments, we actually have an entire 90-minute course that we're going to be, I think it's coming out April 10th, I think is the date that it's going to go public. It's a Wednesday that we're going to have it. And so if you want to check that out, be on the lookout for that and sign up for that class. It's going to be, I'm leading the class. It's going to be super, I don't remember how many tournaments I played. It has to be 50 plus. But, you know, I'm very versed in tournament play and the best way to get the most out of a tournament. So check that out if you want to play tournaments or thinking about a tournament. All right. Let me go to the one on targeting. So targeting came in on the YouTube channel. And if you don't know, we actually have a YouTube channel for pickleball therapy as well. So feel free to check us out there. If you want to see my smiling face on your screen while I'm chatting with you about the mental part of the game, you can go over to Pickleball Therapy on YouTube. If you do go over there, please do subscribe to the channel. It'll help us get, we're trying to get to 1,000 subscribers because that'll really help us reach other players. YouTube, if you know, is very algorithmic. So they need certain metrics to be met, and 1,000 is important to them. Okay. So the question was, what do you do in rec play when a player says you never hit to me the whole game? Seems that's part of the strategy. Identify weaker player. This is from Greg again on the YouTube channel. Greg, here's the thing. So targeting is fine in the sense that it's a strategic consideration for sure, right? And if you're in a competitive setting, then I'm a huge fan of targeting. And I think it's, again, not only okay, I think it's recommended. I would recommend targeting in a competitive setting. In a non-competitive setting, and by that I mean like, you know, rec, open play, that sort of thing, I would recommend not targeting, the opposite, right? Now, I don't recommend freezing out the weaker player, right? So it's not like every ball goes to the stronger player. I'd recommend playing situationally, meaning, you know, hit the balls to different spots, depending on where you want to hit them, without consideration for this player is stronger and this player is weaker. Identifying the weaker player, great. In other words, good skill set, right, to have. So you've identified that player A is a weaker player and player B is stronger. Good. That's a good skill to have, particularly if you're going to play competitively at some point. But in a rec play, what happens is there's a couple of reasons why you don't want to target the weaker player. Besides the fact that, again, from our perspective, winning and losing shouldn't be the metric anyway, and particularly not in rec games because there's no, it's not a tournament or anything where you're advancing if you win. But there's a few other reasons. One is you're going to discourage the better players from coming to your group. And so as a player who oftentimes is the better player in open play situations, if you don't hit me the ball, I have no reason to come back, right? If you're not hitting me any balls, then why would I come play with you, right? I'm not going to come. So that's one reason. Another reason is for yourself, because it gives you a really, if player B is in fact a better player, then hit to player B to see what kind of balls player B hits back at you, right? So that you can then improve as a player. So rec play, recommend not targeting. In competitive play tournaments, yes, targeting is amazingly the right thing to do. All right. Another question from a therapist. What do you do when you feel like you've outgrown your original pickleball foursome or group? That's an interesting question, right? I mean, it's obviously there's, you know, pickleball has different layers to it in terms of how we relate to it, our relationship with the sport. I would suggest that you can find a balance. And what I mean by that is you can still play with your original foursome or group. When you do that, you're going to work on certain parts of your game, right? That perhaps, you know, you're not as comfortable working on when you're playing in a higher setting, right? Higher level setting, and that's normal. You know, and what I mean by that is like, say you're working on like a particular, like your backhand dinks, right? And at the higher level, you're not comfortable with the backhand dink, so maybe you run around it a little bit, hit more forehands. So when you play in the group that's not, that hasn't kept up, right? Take that as an opportunity to work on shots that you wouldn't otherwise hit. Could be an on-volley zone lob, could be backhand dinks. It could be moving the dinks around differently. Maybe you hit your dinks cross court and you can use that that opportunity to hit more dinks straight or in the middle, learn some other dinks, right? Because what happens is when you're playing those groups that there's less pressure on you, less stress on you. And so you're more free to try different things and you can still maintain your social relationship with those folks. You know, so you basically go out there as it's like a drilling session kind of, you know, it's not, doesn't replace drilling, but it becomes that where you can kind of like just practice a little bit and just take the moment to enjoy your friends. And then you make time to play in the other groups that you want to play in. So you just balance it out. I can tell you that's what Jill and I have done over the years, you know, because we have improved in a way that, you know, perhaps in some of the groups that we used to play in, just wouldn't be fair for us to play at our level, right? The way that we can play. So when we play with those groups, we you know, we love them. We like the people, we like the folks. So we go out there and we play a little bit differently. We play a more soft game, more trying a few different things, you know, things like that. So that'd be my recommendation. You can walk that line. And then the last one I'm going to address in this mailbag episode is, actually, I'm going to tell you what it is and I'm going to do a whole episode on this one. So this one had to do with A lot of the therapists were asking about tendencies, right? So like, you know, we always talk about the game being a game of tendencies, pickleball, a game of tendencies. So the suggestion was, can we make a list of common tendencies that we see so we can look for those in our opponents and how to capitalize on them? Great question. Good way to exploit that knowledge. And I'll do a subsequent episode entirely on tendencies. So again, if you have any questions about pickleball, the mental side, or anything else, just feel free to shoot us an email at therapy@betterpickleball.com, and we'll put it in the podcast mailbag for the next mailbag episode. I hope you enjoyed this special episode. The episode that is dropping this week, I'm looking at my notes here, is going to be about podcast language. Or it's not podcast language. The podcast is about language. It's about language. And it's about protecting yourself, because there's oftentimes language that we use that specifically, I'm going to dive into language that we lose around the concept of losing or on losses that is potentially harmful and can, it just puts bad thoughts into our mind, right? Just not a positive way of interacting with losses. So I want to talk about that in this week's regular podcast, which will drop on Friday. Hope you enjoyed the special episode, and we will see you at our regular episode on Friday. Have a great rest of your week.